On this episode of Podigious.
The shadows on his pants, I totally thought like he had peed his pants.
You can't always get what you want.
I wrote down this very important note that Matt is not a happy little buffalo.
Katamata always ruins the moment with a cat joke.
You're gonna need a password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Podigious!
Welcome to Podigious, episode 204, 20,000 Leagues Digi Under the Sea.
Adventure 02.
Episodes 14 through 17.
Destiny of the Digidestined, Yoli's Sincerity, Cody's Lying, and Slavery as Shorthand for Evil.
Recorded November 16th, 2014.
I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
Yo.
And Asher Soffman.
Hey.
Andrew's not feeling well this week, so he won't be joining us today.
Sad face.
This episode of Podigious is brought to you by Omniscient Prophecies. Have you ever been paralyzed with crippling fear of the unknown? Thankfully, there's a solution for that. Just relax, and the writers of your life will introduce a loved one's ghost to explain the future. Omniscient Prophecies is not available on regions, countries, or realities. Check with your doctor to confirm whether you exist within a sloppily written fictional universe before you spend your life waiting for Omniscient Prophecies to appear. So Ashley and I are here to talk about some feedback from the last episode. Hi, Ashley.
Yes, hi. This is the third time we've said hi.
We could say hi all day, Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Hi.
This would be a boring day.
Okay, so the first piece of feedback comes from Nyano Chaos on our comment section, and they're basically talking about this theory they had for how Gatchaman was able to digivolve into Angelmon in the Dark Ocean, and I'll just explain the theory. So it's that Dagumon's official artwork has these holy rings on his right leg / tentacle thingy majiggers, and that they look surprisingly like other holy looking rings on Angelmon, Salamon, Magna Angelmon, and other holy Digimon, and that could be the source of the power Gatchaman used to digivolve. And also that we haven't really seen Kari's light powers in this season, and that is correlated with whether Gatchaman has a tail ring or not. And so that this could be more of an explanation for why Dagumon wanted Kari in particular, because she has some affinity for this holy power, and he also is a source of it, and she could utilize that. And anyway, I think it's weird because I think this being the reason for why Gatchaman was able to digivolve is in equal parts absurd and fits what little evidence we have surprisingly well.
I like it. I just don't like that Kari never questions anything.
Kari just stands there and is like, okay, I got some light now. Cool beans. I don't got no light anymore. Whatever. Yeah. I wish I could be more like Tai.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, this is what she worries about when she's like emanating crazy light powers and whatever. I mean, she's Kari. She's okay, but she's also kind of a twig sometimes.
She has so much potential that's not being fulfilled here.
Yep. Adventure 02, missed potential.
Adventure 02 in a nutshell.
So the next thing we want to talk about was some stuff that Hope was talking about with Rio in our last episode. Just a little couple details that she got a little off, that after I went back and read summaries of all of the WonderSwan games, of the four different games, there's Anode, Cathode Tamer, Tag Tamers, D1 Tamers, and Brave Tamers. Just wanted to correct a little thing. So she mentioned that Rio, in the events of D-Tamers, does something that he can never be understood for, and the other kids kind of like forsake him and never trust him, and so he decides he can never be understood, so he leaves the adventure universe. And it's actually kind of the reverse a little bit. So the events of D1 Tamers are that Rio gets called back in the digital world after Tag Tamers, which is with Rio and Ken, which is a little weird, but anyway, gets called back in the digital world and told that there's this tournament being held by one of the four sovereigns, which we're going to meet soon in 02. But anyway, a tournament held by one of the four sovereigns, and they want to hold it because the other three sovereigns have gone evil and they need a partner to fight with. And so they're trying to find the best tamer in the land or whatever. And so Rio needs to fight through this tournament to be the best tamer and side with whatever sovereign and fight the other three sovereign. And supposedly, this is where it gets a little hazy because the summaries don't go into too much detail about this. But in the events of this tournament, he has to do some kind of really tough things, make some hard decisions, and I think let some Digimon die along the way to win the tournament. And it's all for the sake of like saving the world and stuff. Or it's all for the sake of like fighting other sovereigns. And then at the end, it is revealed that this tournament was all fake. They always wanted Rio. And there's no, all the sovereigns are good. They're all just in on this plan. And it's because Millenniummon, the villain of the first two games and the fourth of all the games, all the WonderSwan games, is back, and Rio's the only one that can fight him, and they need to train him to be good enough to fight him. And Ryo is pissed about it because he had to go through some tough decisions, had to let Digimon die along the way for something that he considers fake, and feels really betrayed by everyone else who knew what the goal was. Like, he fights, appreciate fights the like main adventure cast along the way, and they all are in on it too and stuff. And so he supposedly at the last chunk of the game just is silent and just feels really betrayed, but goes in to fight Millennium anyway because he's like, well, I need to save the world. And in the events of that, saving the world gets flung into the future, and then in the next game gets the choice of whether what universe to go to, and he chooses to go to Tamers because he's like, well, I've been completely betrayed by the adventure people. So that's basically what I gathered from summaries. And so all the sources I use. So the Digimon Wiki has a brief summary on each game, which is what I read. And they're pretty brief, though. So if you want more information, there's this really comprehensive site. I'm not really sure like what the title of the site is. It's called Yesterday Wonderswan Games. And it's this like really comprehensive resource in like about all the different games. And I mean, it has like has the basic storyline summary, which I'm pretty sure is where the Digimon Wiki info comes from. And then there's like for 1.5 games has a full script, there are walkthroughs for each game, maps, music. And so if you want more comprehensive information about each game, there's this link for each one called 13 Years Later, where this person who went to the site, I think 13 years ago, they went through and played there and wrote summaries. But now they went back to it 13 years later, I'm not sure when this one's, probably a couple years ago. And with more understanding Japanese, went through and like detailed more context and thorough explanations. And I haven't had time to read those because they're like pretty long and there are 4 different games. And yeah, I just wanted the brief outline. But if you want more information about this, that's a cool resource to check out. So the next thing I wanted to bring up was kind of auto feedback. Feedback from myself.
From yourself, Jeffrey. This is cheating.
Really what would have been cheating would be to have inserted this in the last episode, which I was like, I don't even know where I would do that. But so after we recorded the episode, there was another extra credits video, and I mentioned extra credits last time because I was like, after I got the idea that like the fact they don't actually defeat Dagumon was actually what makes it cool. But extra credits came out with another video. I think this was actually on Halloween that came out this video, talking about the uncanny in horror and especially video games, and how things being a little bit off is what makes things can really up the horror. I thought it applied really well to the Dark Ocean and that episode because it's like the digital world but a little bit different. It's like things are just a little bit weird here, and I mean it's like they're Digimon but they're not really Digimon, and lots of weird things like that. And what I really like about it is that Adventure Zero 2 is so much about the kids going off and having an adventure and then coming home to their everyday lives, and it's like nothing's changed, and it's like they just go home and they're completely safe, even when they're fighting the Digimon Emperor, even this like biggest threat the digital world's seen in a while, and it's like, well, we just go home, we just have fun, we play with our Digimon in bed. Like, the in light of that, the Dark Ocean in this episode is one of the few times where there's like Kari comes back and it's like, I don't really know, she's gonna be kidnapped again. Like, it's unsettling, and one of the few instances in the show where they don't just come home and are completely safe. They come home and they're safe, but are they really? Which I think is cool. User Digital X on With the Will left a comment talking about how Hurricane Touchdown, the third movie.
Third movie. It's in the English one, right?
Yeah, it's the third part of the American movie. Shares a lot of similarities with the Dark Ocean episode. And I mean, so they both have creepy antagonists that are Lovecraft inspired. They have the ability to transport Digimon. They have the ability to transport children to alternate dimensions. And they also have weird continuity moments, like weird evolutions that don't normally happen. And I mean, so Digital X's comment was basically that you could retool Hurricane Touchdown to be about Agumon, which I don't know. I mean, part of the reason I like the episode where it is because it is dangling and never resolved. And I know a lot of people are pissed about that, and I think it has a lot of weird things being muddled with other Dark Ocean moments and whatever World Darkness moments in the series. But I like how it's in the main series and it's just forgotten about, but we never know if he's going to come back. So if it were its own OVA, it would enter this weird continuity moment where it's like, or it enters the weird continuity of, what's it called, associated materials in Japanese media, like whether everything that's associated with the franchise is also considered canon or not. And it's like, well, in the show, it's unambiguous, so we can always be afraid it's going to come back. But the main reason I want to mention this comment was there's a reply from TMS, who is a super moderator on With the Will, basically describing in depth a lot of the Lovecraft references in Digimon, or Lovecraft inspirations. So, I mean, it's things like, it's been a while since I've seen Hurricane Touchdown, but I basically did not know that Wendigomon or Wendemon is loosely connected to the Lovecraft mythology.
All I know is he dances to All Star.
That That might just be in the dub, Ashley. I'm not sure.
It might just be in the dub. I'm not sure either.
When I was a kid, all I thought about Wendigomon was like, that sounds like Wendy's. I want a hamburger. But anyway.
We were doing this right as children.
Yeah. So if you liked some of the Lovecraft stuff we talked about in the last episode, you should check out this post on With the Will, kind of seeing other parts of the show that resemble Lovecraft. And finally, we have the results of last week's Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll to reveal. And guess who tied for first place?
This is ridiculous. This poll is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
So the winners in first place are a tie between me and Ash. Mine was the Boy, Do You Know How to Party line in response to Yuli. And Ash's was the Divermon. Now, that's what I call red eye reduction quote, which, funnily enough, Ash doesn't even remember picking. So
yeah.
He was like, I'm pretty sure I didn't pick that. And Ashley and I were like, we have evidence in the form of a podcast.
We have a recording of you saying it, so I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah, so I'm still undefeated.
To be fair, mine was only behind by a point from both of those. Okay, it was really close.
That's a good excuse. I'm still undefeated.
You did not. No. I'm giving it to Ash. Ash's what? Win. He was winning most of the time. Did you vote for yourself? Probably.
Okay. Full disclosure, I did vote for myself. Early on, though.
Uh-huh.
Early on, there was times in this poll where it was like, Ash's quote was like had twice as many votes as the other ones. It was like way in the lead. And then for some reason, near the end of the week, it's just like, boom, they both Ashley and mine shot up. So I don't really understand why.
Ridiculous. But yeah,
I was even thinking of this before we started recording, like, should I just say Ash was the winner because I voted for myself? And then I'm like, but that's like a slippery slope. Like, what if Ash voted for himself? What if, like...
No, there's no way Ash voted for himself.
But like, I mean, like, where do we draw the line? Like, what if someone who, like, doesn't listen to the show voted for it? Like, yeah, it's a slippery slope, and I'm the winner, and I'm undefeated.
No, I'm
so
saying Ash is the winner.
I think the only way to actually combat this is to allow ourselves to vote how we would choose. Because, I mean, I voted for Ash in the past, because I was like, that's the best one. And in this one, I voted for the one I thought was the best, which was mine, so...
Wrong. You're all wrong.
I am undefeated. And I like how it's even... I'll have this link in the show notes to this tweet from ShawnieMac23, where I think he said he voted for mine, but also didn't want to support my gloating, so I like how audience is reacting to my extreme gloating, and I'm still on top.
As they should be.
I'm still on top.
Your reign of terror has to end sometime.
We pick up after escaping Cthulhu forever.
In episode 14, Samurai of Sincerity. The kids go to a restaurant in the digital world, and Yuli acts like an obnoxious tourist who refuses to use the local currency. We meet Not Willis, and Mimi inspires Yuli to activate the Digi-Egg of Obnoxiousness.
In episode 15, Big Trouble in Little Edo, the kids visit the set of Rurouni Kenshin, wake up Shogun Gekkoman again, and two ninjas have a samurai duel.
In episode 16, 20,000 Digi-Leagues Under the Sea, the kids trap themselves underwater to teach the audience a very important lesson about the nature of lies. Lying is absolutely the worst thing you can do, and is punishable by having to watch all of your friends asphyxiate slowly to death.
In episode 17, Ghost of a Chance, the older kids gather to celebrate August 1st, just like the rest of the Digimon fandom. Wizardmon's ghost delivers a prophetic info dump he couldn't possibly have known.
So, favorites. Do any of us have any favorite things about any of these episodes?
I really liked when TK went over to Matt and his dad's house, and they had that moment where, you know, it's awkward. Like, our parents have been divorced for a long time, and it's still awkward. And I liked that acknowledgement.
Hmm.
And how they moved past it, too.
Mm-hmm. Which part in particular were you thinking was awkward?
Well, it was super awkward. All of it.
It was really awkward. He was like, yo, this is so messy. Mom would never let you get away with this. And Matt, like, was like, well, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, Matt got really snappy.
And, like, he had the right to be.
But, I mean, okay, so I was a little thrown off by the fact that once Matt's dad came, I expected that to be more awkward than it was. It seemed like that was, once Matt's dad came, they were all, like, were talking like normal and there was no awkwardness.
Well, by then, well, it was awkward for other reasons at that point, but yeah. By then.
They were talking about ghosts.
Yeah, it was awkward for writing reasons, but by then, Matt and TK had already smoothed things over between them, and they were like, okay, we're gonna be chill for Dad, because obviously Dad is having a rough time right now.
Okay, this is a really... I'm going to try to find in the for the show notes a clip of this, but while they were showing his dad, I think the camera was from above, so they had these weird shadows everywhere, and, like,
yeah,
it, I guess he was also sweaty, like, he had, like, armpit sweats and stuff, but the shadows on his pants, I totally thought, like, he had peed his pants and stuff. And I couldn't, like, I noticed it once, and I couldn't stop looking at him, like, geez, he's, like, it's, like, going all the way down his legs, too, like, jeez.
That's so unfortunate. Wow, I did not see this.
I did not notice this.
Poor Matt's dad.
Next to favorites in my notes, I just put Wizardmon, Mega Seizuremon, Yoli. I don't know.
Mega Seizuremon, really? Mega Seizuremon isn't Metal Seizuremon.
I know, but he had the same voice, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, did he?
I think so.
Yeah.
Whose voice was Michael?
Someone really old.
Yeah. What accent was that? Wait a second.
I don't know. That was really weird.
I was like, he does not sound American at all. Like, what is happening?
He sounds like he's trying to be Australian, but also not trying to be Australian.
Yeah. Something like that.
I was about to complain that this shouldn't be in the favorite section. Then I was like, actually, I could call his voice one of my least favorite aspects of this arc. So I'm happy with that being in here.
It confused me a lot.
Tom Gibbous.
I still remember I don't remember noticing it when I was a kid, and I could not notice it now.
Oh, yeah.
I totally noticed it as a kid. I was like, what is going on here? Oh, he's from Minnesota. Maybe that's the problem.
What? No.
Minnesota?
The voice actor is from Minnesota, not Michael. Michael's from New York.
I'm pretty sure I've talked to Minnesotans? Yeah, is that how you say this before?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not from Minnesota.
Actually, in certain parts of the country, it's not Minnesota. It's Minnepop or Minnecoke.
Jeffrey.
God. Can we stop this podcast now?
Yeah, can we? I'm done. I'm done here. He is best known for playing Shikamaru, actually, on Naruto.
Oh, obviously.
Shikamaru? I don't even know who that is.
I actually like Shikamaru.
When do they come in as a character? Are they there in the beginning?
Yeah. He's the one that does shadow stuff and goes to sleep all the time.
Oh, is he the teacher?
No, he's a kid. He's a kid.
Oh.
Oh, this guy. He's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I've only seen, like, one episode of Naruto, and it was, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I've only seen part of it. It just ended. I'm thinking about... No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
I'm not. Who am I kidding?
Well, the manga just ended. How far behind is the anime?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, my other least favorite thing in this arc was the whole episode 15, Big Trouble in Little Edo. Just, is it Edo or Edo, actually?
I thought it was Edo, but...
I thought it was Edo because it's Japanese.
But you wouldn't pronounce... Wait, would you? Yes, you would. Yeah. Yeah, you would. Okay. How was it actually transliterated, though, in...
Did they say it in the episode?
I don't think so. Actually, maybe they did, but I wouldn't trust their pronunciation.
Samurai!
it is Edo.
Okay. I was starting to feel like I've been wrong all this time, all these years of my life.
I think it's one of those words that I've, like, seen written a ton and never actually heard out loud. Like, more recently, the studio that is making Fate Stay Night and Limited Blade Works and made Fate Zero. Ash, how would you...
What?
The studio that's making Fate Stay Night.
What about them?
Can you say the name? I don't want to say the name the way I would say it.
Can you show me what they are? I don't remember.
You don't know the
name? Yeah, I don't know the name.
Oh, really?
I don't remember, man. I don't pay attention to this stuff. Oh, UFO table.
Right.
Is it UFO table? I don't know.
So I've only in the past couple days heard people say it, and they all say UFO table. But I always thought it was UFO-table, but...
I don't know, actually.
I'm pretty sure it's UFO table.
UFO table?
It just sounds so weird.
UFO table sounds weirder, or UFO-table.
Yeah,
sounds
UFO-table, what is that?
I mean, UFO-table is a very American or English pronunciation. UFO table, whatever. Anyway, yeah, so that whole episode was just, like, had almost nothing remarkable about it. Like, I didn't love any of these episodes.
Okay, I looked it up. It's UFO-table Yugen Gaisha.
Huh. So why do people say UFO table?
Because that's what it looks like to Americans.
Huh. That's really strange.
Either way, it's weird. Weird.
Yeah, it's UFO. Huh.
UFO table.
So desu ne.
Igenki desu ka? Ryugakusei desu ka?
Ryugakusei desu ka?
Dochira ga ii desu ka?
いい天気ですね。
So...
Okay, can we stop?
right, okay. So I didn't like any of these episodes in particular, but there were still interesting parts of all three of them, except for Big Trouble in Little Edo, which just, I feel like had nothing redeeming about it. It was just so mediocre and just like, just happened and...
It did. It just happened.
I feel like we may have been spoiled by all the plot episodes.
There were plot episodes?
Not here, not in this one, but like after getting through season one, what we remember are the plot episodes. We don't remember all this filler we had to slog through.
I guess so.
I actually very distinctly do remember the fight between Shurimon and Ninjamon.
Really?
Yeah, from being a child. I don't know. There's one shot of like Shurimon, I guess when he's actually like getting owned by Ninjamon for a little bit there.
Uh-huh.
There was one shot that I was like, I very distinctly remember this moment.
I remember the one between Shurimon and Digitamamon better than the one between Shurimon and Ninjamon.
Yeah, same. I mean, I remembered the whole Little Edo or whatever. It's, I don't know if that's actually supposed to be the name, if that's just in the title canon. But anyway, I remember that whole thing because I even alluded to it last season. We were talking about how in 02, there'd be more establishment of different parts of the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually funny because I think I mentioned that in regards to when we're talking about the restaurant being the only like flavor we get of the world, and that like it's now this, these other elements are introduced right after the restaurant again. Like they still go back to that well, very small well, but I just feel like there were lots of filler in the first season that still established progression.
These didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, like they really were filler in the sense that you could remove it and not notice that something had been missing.
Yeah, except we needed, you know, them to get Shurimon and Submarimon.
Yeah.
But even those felt off.
Right. But I mean, the Big Trouble in Little Edo, like that, there was no new evolution in it.
Oh yeah, that didn't do anything, and Ninjamon's voice was really annoying.
I don't remember his voice.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was super annoying. Take my word for this. So annoying.
So yeah, so my favorite moment was the whole scenario of the older kids coming back. They weren't really all gone except for Mimi, but anyway, them all like reuniting to remember August 1st. And it's kind of weird because I forgot that there was this in-canon celebration of August 1st in the show.
We should have planned this better.
Planned what?
Releasing these episodes.
Release this episode on August 1st?
Yeah, we should have worked on it.
Well, let's wait a couple months.
I would have killed y'all trying to get done that fast.
That would have been crazy.
Also, I would have been in Middlebury.
Yeah. Anyway, I was thinking that maybe we should have timed this for, I was thinking maybe this could have been time for Halloween to have the spooky Wizard Monster Ghost episode on Halloween, but...
Oh, yeah, I thought that too.
I don't want to reveal, like, we already said when this is recorded, so I guess it's already going to be embarrassing how late this is going to come out. Anyway.
It's going to come out in, like, February.
hopefully 2014.
I have no faith.
No faith.
None. None at all.
Do you have reliability instead?
Oh.
More than you.
No.
Okay, so yeah, I just liked them all having a little reunion, and I'm a little less enthralled by the whole like Wizard Monster Ghost and haunting the TV station. I liked that, but like it was mostly just the kids coming back and like looking at Fuji TV from across the water and stuff. That was.
I liked the animation in that episode.
I guess I don't really recall it being that different, aside from the shots of all the kids together. It looked a little bit different. Looked better.
Yes, it was better. It was better all around.
So I want to start off the general discussion with just a quick rundown of the title references. some of them are pathetic. Anyway, so episode 15 is Big Trouble in Little Edo, which is a reference to Big Trouble in Little China, which is a movie I had not seen before, and I don't really care. I assume you guys haven't seen it either.
No.
And I wonder if we can figure out the reference in episode 16, titled 20,000 Digileagues Under the Sea.
I really can't place that.
I don't know.
The sheer laziness of just, like, placing Digi in the middle of a title of a famous book. Like, what the hell?
Jeff, you are so... What would you have done?
Well, I guess we haven't gotten to the worst one yet.
I thought... The Digi should have gone in front of the sea. I don't know. That's
true. Like, Digi, what's a Digi League?
That would have been better.
Yeah, what's a Digi League? Like, I just don't understand.
What's a digi dollar?
I don't know.
Well, I have a. I'm going to talk about that anyway. it could have been worse. It could have been digi 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Yeah, that, yeah. I guess
20,000 leagues digi under.
Digi the
digi prepositions, digi articles. And also, it's, so I remember as a kid, I can't remember when I would have first heard about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and probably like read abridged versions or something back when we were young enough that abridged versions of the book were a thing. And I think it must have been like third grade or so. And I remember being really confused because I understood league was a measure of distance, but thought that 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea meant like how deep it was under the sea. Uh-huh. But it actually means like they're under the sea and they travel around the world 20,000 leagues. So it's like distance traveled, not depth. And I feel like this episode title just furthers that misconception by they don't move around at all. They're just under the water and stay there.
Yeah.
Nothing redeeming about that title. Well, I get, okay. It's redeeming in that it is not episode 17, Ghost of a Chance.
Nothing wrong with that.
You don't stand a ghost of a chance.
Oh, yeah. So in season one of this podcast, I can't remember what we were talking about, but I include the link to this clip from Yugi the Bridge series where they made fun of how many times the Four Kids dub of Yu-Gi-Oh! Says Ghost of a Chance. And I guess I didn't realize at the time that there was actually an episode of the show called Ghost of a Chance. In which they say that title. Oh, wait. I'm going to say that for a ridiculous dialogue draft. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So, okay. No more titles.
I'm pretty sure the best title is Samurai. Sincerity.
At least I didn't read the title out loud to get confused there. It also just... So, Shurimon is not a samurai.
He's like, not.
Oh, my God.
Not like, a samurai. He's a ninja.
Right, he's definitely... Right, so Shurimon's name comes from Shuriken, which is like a ninja throwing star. It's not samurai at all.
They wanted the alliteration.
Yeah, ninja of sincerity.
So it could have been Shinobu of sincerity.
Nobody knows what that
Shinobi.
Is.
Shinobi. Shinobi of sincerity.
Definitely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to the extreme. There was... Oh, what was it? There was something in this... Oh, right. So we're going to talk more about like lessons learned and sincerity and stuff. But I remember as a kid not understanding what the word sincerity meant and feeling like they had to like...
Wow.
Really? You think that's extreme?
How old were you? Like 11?
It's a word that's not used very often.
It's used all the time. Like sincerely, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's weird because I think sincere as an adjective is used a ton, but sincerity as a noun isn't too much. So I feel like the show, a couple of different times, especially in that episode, kind of hammered in using adjectives like sincere to kind of like remind you of what sincerity meant, which I feel like is similar if they use a word like shinobi. Like, no one would know what shinobi meant, so they'd have to keep being like, shinobi's like a ninja, guys, like, if they did that. Whereas samurai, it's just like, okay, we get it. It's Japanese. It's samurai. And yeah, I'm pretty sure all this comes from the dub. I'm pretty sure there's no indication of Shurimon being like a samurai in the original Japanese.
They were just having a duel of ninjas, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the duel they were having in that episode was very samurai-esque, and I'm pretty sure the movie that Yoli was supposed to be watching beforehand was samurais, not ninjas. So there's that, but yeah, wasn't quite as bad as just outright referring to Shurimon as a ninja or as a samurai.
See, it's getting confusing.
It is. Oh, I'm trying to remember which episode it is. And I think it was in the first episode, actually. They're sending emails on their whatever D3 accessory thing. And I think it's Yoli sends a message and says, like, we're going to go take a look. But it's saying, like, we're going to go take a cook.
Yeah.
And it was weird because it was, like, a kind of humor that aged really well. And it wasn't actually that funny, but it's, like, autocorrect humor is so much more relatable to people nowadays.
It's true.
You know, like, their entire like, blogs and things related to funny autocorrects.
I love reading funny autocorrects.
They
so
are
good.
Truly excellent.
I just like crack up for 5 minutes.
They're really funny.
They're so funny. I mean, I feel like half of them are fake, but it doesn't even matter.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen any sites in a long time, but I remember they used to be, I mean, there were generators for making the like iOS interface of a text message. So you could just put in whatever and make it look like it was a conversation.
Oh, really?
Which is kind of bizarre, because I mean, you could just fake a conversation. Like, it's not that hard to whatever.
They still have those, I'm pretty sure.
I guess I was like, wondering, because, like, have they updated the interface to, like, keep up to date with different versions of operating systems?
They probably just have several different versions now.
So the top one is fakeiphonetext.com and is not up to date. It's using, like, iOS 6 or iOS 5 or something. But, yeah. Anyway, it's weird, like, that kind of humor, it's strange to find something that, like, probably wasn't that relatable of a joke at the time and is now more of a... I don't know.
I didn't take it as an autocorrect thing. It was just like she had mistyped it.
Exactly.
That's what I thought.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is like a thing that still would have happened back then.
Yeah.
True. Totally.
Although L and C are nowhere near each other on the keyboard.
I sometimes feel like I make these types of typos where I'm like, I have most of the word correct, but I just did a totally different letter for...
Yeah, I do too. It's not as common, though.
Did anyone else notice at the beginning of episode 14, I think I pointed out to Ashley, so this is after she already watched it, but I was hoping actually that Andrew would be on, he'd be able to give us more information about this, but at the beginning of episode 14, in the top left, there's what looks like a blurred out version of the Fox Kids logo on the Netflix version of the show.
I noticed that last time, actually. This is not the first time that's happened. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what it is.
But it doesn't happen every episode, does it? No.
No.
But like, so why does it happen?
So I guess that they had to recover it from like the broadcast versions that were watermarked by Fox Kids. Is that? I guess we don't know anything about this.
Sounds tragic.
Well, at least it exists in some form. I'm curious to look at the DVDs. Like,
yeah, I was about to say, what about the DVD version? We should open it just for this.
Yeah, I don't know if I've opened 02, because 02 is just, I want to have it, but...
Did you open other ones?
I think I opened Adventure when I first got it, because I was like, yay, DVDs! And I wanted to, like, read the pamphlet. So I had complaints about, I mean, it's a general theme, but I had more thoughts about it after watching these episodes, about, like, the false stakes that keep being artificially raised. Like, they're fighting in these episodes really big ultimate-level Digimon. I guess not in every episode. I mean, they fight Shogun Gekkomon and Mega Seijimon. Are there any other ultimates? I guess just those two. But at the same time, they're raising the stakes like that. But because we haven't had a build-up of lower-level Digimon, it's like... they don't feel like they're that big of a deal anymore. So it's just meaningless that they're stronger.
Well, we've had cases of that before where we fought Andromon and he was an ultimate. In both seasons, we fought Andromon pretty early.
True.
And it didn't really matter.
Yeah, I guess actually there was Andromon, there was Manzumon too. Like Manzumon is even hard to remember was an ultimate. So that's a fair point. But I feel like it feels more persistent in this season. Especially since the Dark Spirals are like specifically to have stronger Digimon, but...
It's not as much of a problem when you can just fix the possession problem.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about whether or not you can legitimately
beat them. Which is why it feels so strange. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
I guess the show is always kind of a tournament enemy, in a sense. And it feels like we've just, like, these haven't been legitimate wins. I don't know.
Well, then maybe you need to reevaluate what gives you satisfaction.
Well, what troubles me more is that there's also the 5 out of 8 of the Armor of Illusions are all rideable. I think the only 3 that aren't are Shurimon, Flamedramon, and Digmon. And all the other ones are specifically rideable. And it throws the kids into the middle of these battles that are supposed to be, that I feel like are supposed to be higher stakes and more life-threatening. And that the kids are just like in the middle of it for some reason. Just because the designs look cooler that way. And there's also the fact that like the kids are so afraid of hurting these Digimon. Like they've faced more ultimates than before and they're afraid of hurting them even more even though they couldn't lay a scratch on them anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these episodes just felt especially strange because Ken was supposedly like taking over tons of territory and they were like, oh, we just need to get like one square back, and then he just like wasn't even paying attention to them really because he's creating Chimeramon or whatever, and like
I got the sense that he was like going mostly on autopilot in terms of what they were actually fighting against. And I can't remember which episode it was in, but it might have been one of the first ones that they got a weird sense where they were like, we should go celebrate now, and they were like, and then Cody was like, but guys, we were winning, but we don't know why, and we haven't seen Ken in a while, maybe we shouldn't be celebrating. So I got the sense that they thought they were winning, like they were fighting back and like getting a lot more territory, but also like, why hasn't Ken shown up? Something's off.
I just didn't get the sense that they had reclaimed that much territory.
Yeah, they should just like show a map of like the current status, right? Like that would make things clearer. Maybe they did and I just didn't notice it.
Yeah.
You can't always get what you want.
I just, the one time that they showed the map in this episode that I remember was showing how many new black squares there were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
always new black squares.
And I was like, yeah. So it's like, it felt like there should have been real stakes.
But there weren't.
That were not addressed. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'll need a stake in order to slay vampires, and they've already beaten Myotismon, so.
Yeah.
Or have they?
So speaking of Digimon that have been defeated in the real world, there were two notes I wanted to talk about. That so in this arc, we got Ikakumon facing Mega Seijimon in underwater in the digital world. And Ikakumon implies it's the same Mega Seijimon for Tokyo.
Yeah.
He says something along the lines of like, I think he may have said I fought Mega Seijimon in Tokyo. He might not have said this. I can't remember exactly.
He did not say this.
I see.
But he did say he fought Mega Seijimon in Tokyo. Yeah.
And I think he said something like my old foe. Which could mean the entire class of Mega Seijimon, or could mean the specific one.
Yeah, it was not clear.
Not clear. And
I feel like this is always unclear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, so if it was the same Mega Seijimon, it totally debunks the Digimon who die in the real world don't come back to life in the digital world theory.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never believed that.
Right.
Anyway.
The thing is, like, we have such vague evidence on both sides supporting and debunking that theory.
Yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, we have references to Pumpkinmon and Gatsumon in this episode, in this arc, where Ty and Matt walk by the shop where they saw them. But that reminds me.
TK and Matt.
Oh, my God. Ty's initials are TK.
You're right, they are. I never noticed that.
But yeah, so TK and Matt walk by the shop that reminds them of Pumpkinmon and Gatsumon, and I can't remember exactly what they say, but it's definitely along the lines of, like, we miss our friends. And it could be them saying that they are dead permanently and they've tried to find them in the digital world and they can't find them. Or it could be they tried to find them and they haven't found them, but maybe they're still alive. Or it could mean they're permanently dead.
Could mean they're just not back yet. I mean, there's
so many things.
There's no time frame on these things. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only cases we have of Digimon we know don't come back to life are Wizardmon, that don't come back to life in the digital world, are Wizardmon and Myotismon.
Well, Wizardmon was apparently busy gathering information.
Yeah, apparently. I think there are theories that these two Digimon are both special in different ways. I mean, Wizardmon isn't even from the digital world originally, supposedly.
Right.
And Myotismon, I don't know, he resurrected himself already and possessed... Anyway, I was covering up a spoiler alert. So spoiler alert, there's stuff. Anyway, right. So I'm saying he resurrected himself in season one.
Right.
I mean, that's already kind of
special. He did do that. Yes.
So yeah, I don't know. Everything's unclear.
Yep.
Speaking of unclear, we get an explanation of digital currency in this episode, in this arc.
Ugh.
In episode 14? Was it episode 14 or 15?
Do we? We get an explanation?
Oh, no.
That was episode 14, yeah.
I said exploration, and I meant a very bad exploration.
Oh, ah, I see.
The deal with this restaurant in season one, in the dub, is that Joe tries to pay Digitaimon in digidollars, and Digitaimon says, I don't accept digidollars. And I think it's unclear what he accepts. Does he accept US dollars or yen? Because it's really vague whether the US show is set... I mean, they make it clear it's set in Japan, right? But...
yeah.
They also don't mention yen or anything, so...
So,
but then in the original Japanese, it made more sense because in season one, right, Joe tries to pay in yen because he came from Japan and has yen, and Digitaimon only accepts US dollars because, like, the internet is more US centric. I mean, that's totally believable. But then in this season, Yoli tries to pay with quote unquote money, and Digitaimon only accepts digidollars, which is the opposite of what he accepted before. He only accepted money, and Joe tried to pay in digidollars. But Digitaimon does refer to, he does say that since the Dark Masters left, I only accept digidollars, as if that explains anything. But I find it so strange that they clearly, like, tried to correct this piece of canon. Like, I don't know why. It's like they flipped it and they were like, let's explain some more. And there's also the fact that Michael saves the day by having digidollars, which makes no sense if he's, like, hasn't been in the digital world that often.
Right.
And again, things make much more sense in the English, or sorry, in the original Japanese, where Yuli tries to pay in yen, Digitaimon only accepts US dollars, as before, and Michael comes in from the US with US dollars. It all makes sense.
That makes way more sense.
Makes too much sense, almost.
Yeah.
In the show notes, I'll have an image of a spreadsheet I made that's only, like, you know, like four rows and four columns. Anyway.
Wait, so where did... Well, Joe had yen in the Japanese. Because where did he get digidollars?
Makes no sense in the dub.
Okay. For a thought.
I don't think it's supposed to make sense. I think the most bizarre thing, I think, is that the dub bothered to write in a line explaining that reversal, because it just makes so little sense, even that reversal. But they tried to cover it up.
I love the dub. Just want to throw that out there. So good.
So quote unquote good.
It is Good. Yeah. My shining endorsement of the dub.
So we also got the new summer clothes this arc. Did you guys notice that?
Yes, I did. I like them so much more.
Wait, what did you say?
Did you notice in the real world they switched clothes to their summer clothes?
Oh yeah, I was like, whoa, what is up?
So I guess they did it. They started wearing them in episode 15. So we got them in their old clothes in episode 14, and this is, I guess, they wear the same clothes in Hurricane Touchdown, the third part of the U.S. movie and the third Japanese movie. So it's indication of kind of where the timeline of that is.
Hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Super weird how they all just switch clothes overnight. Like, they're all coordinated about that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that makes sense as, like, in so many anime, they wear uniforms because they're in junior high school or high school. But in the original Japanese, these kids are all in elementary school, so they don't wear uniforms at that point, from what I've tried to research about that. So that's why they don't have a uniform, and the older kids do. Actually, do the older kids switch to a different uniform?
I mean, Tai and them were definitely wearing different, but they're always wearing different clothes.
Yeah, they were wearing just, like, summer break clothes. None of them were wearing their uniform except for Joe, who is always doing the same thing.
He's in perpetual school.
Oh, I hadn't really considered that, like, the fact that it's their reunion of August 1st meant that it's, like, summer break again.
Yeah.
Huh. That's kind of strange. Because, like, it's weird to think that the entirety of the first season happened already in the course of this time, basically.
The entirety of the first season happened in, like, a day.
It was a couple of days that they were in the digital world. Like, between, I think it's like August 4th or something when they defeated Myotismon.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's a couple of days, but... I mean, and they're in the digital world for like months, so it's...
Yeah.
I wrote down this very important note that Matt is not a happy little buffalo.
He is not. You are correct. What was that? That had to have been like a Buddhist chant tape, right? In the original Japanese.
Oh, yeah. That's what I assume.
Oh.
I guess they couldn't try to make it about Bakuman lose your power anymore, so they had to replace it with something else.
Happy little buffalo.
Oh, I guess in regards to timing, I think before we were confused about timing of the seasons, or at least I was, especially our War Game movie, and this arc made it clear that in the Japanese version, our War Game takes place during spring break. Actually, I researched it, so it's not actually clear from these episodes. Anyway, our War Game takes place in spring break on March 4th. So that's actually like 215 days after August 1st. So it's like almost a year later in Japanese. But in the...
But that doesn't...
Right. So in the dub, in this arc, Yoli mentions that our War Game took place in the same summer as the first season. So... Uh-huh. And then there's the fact that in the Japanese, this anniversary of August 1st is the third year anniversary, and in the English is the fourth year anniversary. So right. All the times are, there's, in the Japanese, there's a almost a 1 year break between season one and our War Game, and then about 2 years before this season.
Okay, that makes sense.
And a little less than that, because it starts earlier, right? And then in the English, there's our War Game, I guess, happens very soon after, and then there are 3.5 years or so. So weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
I want to quickly list the season one callbacks, but we don't need to discuss them. I mean, there's Digitamamon's Diner, Digitamamon. Betamon was actually only seen in season one in Digitamamon's Diner, actually, which is a weird thing.
Really?
He's like in like the background of one frame.
Yeah.
Shogun Gekkomon returns, Gekkomon the Automamon return, Ikakumon vs. Mega Seijumon returns, Waymon returns, Wizardmon and Fuji TV, sitting under a tree discussing black ears. And there's also Tokyo Geography comes back. Like, well, they're in Daiwa Park, which I don't think they were in last season. Whether that's where they're across looking at Fuji TV building and talking and stuff. They go back to Fuji TV station. They go back to Matt's apartment in Odaiba. They go to Tokyo Tower. They go to Shibuya Crossing. And yeah, those are all the things I noticed.
Good job. Way to be.
I don't know what purpose they have in having those references, aside from nostalgia, but whatever.
Probably mostly nostalgia.
Yeah. So in this arc, we get introduced to Michael, who is, aside from Willis, which I guess we haven't been formally introduced to because we haven't watched Hurricane Touchdown yet. But anyway, we get introduced to Michael, who's a new Digidestined and part of this weird class of not important Digidestined.
They were only partially destined.
It makes me wonder, like, what are they destined for?
Yeah.
They are having their own adventures that we are not privy to because we are Japanese. Apparently.
I mean, so from reading the notes, I've Kanaka talking about tamers. Part of the inspiration for what the difference between a tamer and a chosen child, which is a Japanese name for Digidestined, was that they're not chosen for some specific fate. They're just kids.
Uh-huh.
That seems like they're kind of trying to hedge that into Digidestined now. And by the end of the season, spoiler alert, there are like everyone gets a Digimon and everyone's a Digidestined. So, last season I tried to talk about what made someone a Digidestined and kind of fumbled around with different terminology. So I wanted to briefly explain formal logic, but what I meant when I said things were necessary but not sufficient, and the basic concept of necessity and sufficiency. So when I talking about conditions to define something, when I said that a necessary condition basically means that if you pick a Digidestined and you had necessary conditions for what a Digidestined is, then you know those necessary conditions are true of a Digidestined. And a sufficient condition means that if you pick a random person, then you know they're a Digidestined if sufficient conditions are true. So I have a link to a Wikipedia article about necessity and sufficiency, but it's kind of really confusing. It uses abstract math terminology that made it more confusing. But anyway, so like in season one, the necessary conditions for being a Digidestined are witnessing a Digimon and having a greatest strength that matches a crest. So they're necessary because if you pick a Digidestined, you know those conditions are both true. And they're sufficient because if you pick a random person and you know those conditions are true, you know they're Digidestined. So if you pick a random person, and if they have witnessed Digimon, and if they have the greatest strength matching a crest, they become a Digidestined. However, season two gets really complicated with the core group, which is just the three new characters, Davis, Yuli, and Cody. And for them, the necessary and sufficient conditions are witnessing Digimon, being young enough. And this is actually my theories. They don't really spell it out in the show. So take this all with a big grain of salt. But witnessing Digimon, being young enough, being near Digiport when Tai touches Vimon's Digi-Egg, and having an affinity for crests, but not really the same conditions as before.
Hmm.
And then once Ken's involved, it gets even more complicated because the conditions are witness a Digimon and either go through the stuff that Ken went through in the WonderSwan games, which I can't detail in full here, or be young enough near Digiport and have crest affinity.
Did Ken witness a Digimon before he got the...
I'm not 100% sure about that, without knowing the details of the WonderSwan games, which I don't know the full details. He may have just inherited his brother's Digivice and then seen Digimon after that.
No, I thought that was his Digivice all along.
Oh, yeah. Huh. So it's even more complicated. And then the conclusion of, like, once we introduce Willis and Michael into the mix, it's just possibly have to witness a Digimon and something else? Like... So like, clearly it's not everyone who witnesses a Digimon becomes a Digidestined right away, because there are thousands of people who witness the events in Odaiba, who witness the Aboramon battle online, and they don't become Digidestined right away. So there's something else that narrows down the pool. Witnessing Digimon is a necessary condition, but it's not the only one. It doesn't narrow down things to define the set of Digidestined. And I just... I had doubts in the middle of season one, because I was like, okay, we have one necessary condition, it's witness Digimon, but that's not enough. And I was like, I was annoyed. I was like, what's the other condition? And there was another condition. They explained it. It was having their strongest quality match one of the eight crests. And now I don't have trust that they will actually explain how other Digimon or Digidestined are chosen in this season. They kind of just blow it up to everyone.
Didn't the Genii and the others, didn't they make the crests to correspond to those kids?
Oh.
I thought that was what their deal was. It was whatever their strongest, attribute was at the time, and then they made the crests and attached them to the Digi-Eggs.
So that makes even less sense, because then why those eight kids? Why their strongest qualities?
It's a mystery we do not have the answer to. My personal theory would be they were there, so they had that connection to the digital world. They witnessed it.
But so did others. I mean, they weren't the only ones.
Yes, so did others. So did others, but they were also open to it.
Hmm.
Because, you know, later on we get Oikawa, who was much older than them, but also a Digidestined. He was in, like, high school.
I do recall that now that I think about it. There's this world.
Stop trying to make sense of it.
I thought I had everything really mapped out thoroughly, and, you know, a bunch of these were theories, but
yeah, no,
it all just falls apart with what you just said. You know,
Ash likes doing that.
I do. I enjoy making you laugh, I enjoy, like, making myself laugh at the folly of anyone trying to put a set of rules on the digital world.
Which I mean, having things be vague and not really knowing why the kids were chosen, I guess that's not the end of the world, right? But what bothers me is having, when it's eight kids, and I forgot to mention how they were a generation before them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when there are eight kids chosen and they use terms like digi-destined and chosen children, it's all about like fate especially in Japanese, it's like these kids were chosen for a reason. I guess it's even more like that in the dub where it's like they're destined for something, destined for greatness. And I feel like there's...
Well, I actually feel like in the context of Genii and the others choosing those kids, it's actually less of a, oh my god, there has to be some magic grand fate thing going on, rather than just a like...
That's true.
Okay, we chose these kids. They are the chosen children now.
Yeah, right. Like, I think Digi-Destin makes it seem like there's some grander thing than just entities choosing them because they need to choose someone. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like Chosen Children for that. And yeah. I guess I can kind of make myself think that Digi-Destined is like fancy terminology to throw around someone that you've chosen. Like, you're destined for something good because I've chosen you. But
isn't that like, whatever. Just give up right now.
This is Ashley's contribution to that discussion. I like how you tried, though. You're like, isn't that like...
Nah.
I just give up.
Just give up right now. Oh, Yoli. You know what? I don't want Yoli to learn any lessons, quite frankly.
I like her. You know the way she is.
Yeah.
I just wish that the writers understood her. I feel like nobody was in character for these four episodes. Or if they were in character, then they were just super boring about it.
I felt like they were in character. It's just their characters didn't progress at all.
I thought there were aspects of Yoli that were totally in character in her episode.
I feel like Yoli was better than Cody. Cody's episode did not ring true to me.
Well, we're getting there later.
Any point. Okay, sorry.
But okay, so in Yoli's episode, I really didn't really understand the fight between her and Digitamamon. I mean, okay, they fought about money, but then it just kept going on and on. I was like, what's happening?
It was really weird.
Oh my god, it was, like, she was being obnoxious to him because he wanted them to pay? Like, that's a totally reasonable expectation.
Yeah.
And the fight kept going after Michael kept, like, he said multiple times, I have money, I'm gonna pay, and then the fight kept going?
Yeah, so then there's multiple references to Yoli, like, being very blunt throughout the episodes. But then somehow at the end, you know, she gets Shuriman, and he's the samurai of sincerity or whatever. So then she, like, says that she's always going to be sincere, but there's no change in her character or what she says at all. And I'm like, what's the difference between being blunt and being sincere?
I think blunt is a form of sincerity, but I think more of if there was any transformation in this episode, which I agreed in my notes, I was like, did she really change? And I think I came to the conclusion that she did change a little bit in that she was critical of herself. She admitted to being, she laid everything on the table and was like, here's what I thought of you, here's why. I may have jumped to some conclusions and I realize that's bad and I'm open to changing them in the future. Like, she at least stated that she wants to change herself. You know, that's something. It's not as good as actually going through stuff to change yourself, but
it is something.
What I thought was particularly weird about the whole sincerity stuff was, like, we got a previous episode of Yoli admiring Mimi and being like, oh my god, I look up to her so much, I want to be like her, I want to have her as my sister. And this episode was, I feel like, the more realistic, like, Mimi was doing role model-y things and Yoli was like, I have different opinions. And I feel like I read into it as her, you know, actually having to deal with how she incorporates being more like Mimi, and it's not as easy. You know, like, it's, she's different.
Yes, Yoli, be your own person.
yeah, really.
Digimon, yeah, I feel like Digimon isn't so great at the, I feel like there are multiple times in the series where they teach the lesson of
be like your friends.
Yeah, be like your friends.
That's true.
Be like your older
be
role
like
model.
Your senpai. Yeah.
But I don't think that she is in the end, so it's fine. It's like, I don't want Yoli to change. It's just the episode tried to be like, yep, you learned a lesson. And I'm like, I don't think we did. I don't.
Yeah, no. Agreed.
Yeah, I think it was a weird show. It was weird showing a contrast between the two of them, because I think the what is right stands somewhere between Mimi's extreme trust and trying to defend Digitamon after she knows he's been corrupted and stuff, and Yoli's like, I'll never trust you again because you made me pay for my meal. Like,
I don't know what she doesn't trust him for, quite honestly.
Because he was a jerk to her, and she reacted very hot-headedly to it.
She's also a jerk.
Totally. But yeah.
So you think the lesson was that she recognizes that she's a jerk?
Yeah.
Okay.
If
there was a lesson.
I agree that the episode made it seem very much like, I have learned something, and it's like, I guess, kind of.
Like, her final conversation with Digitalmon is them both being like, we're going to be better people. And Yoli is basically like, okay, whatever, to like his, we're going to be better people.
Yeah, I remember that. That was good. That was good.
And I was like, wait, what? I'm so confused. And then it immediately transitions into like Michael being like, we should go on a date. And then Yoli is like, hell yeah. And I'm like, no lessons were learned here.
No.
Well, the lesson was that if you are sincere, then boys will like you.
Oh, ew.
Yeah. I didn't mean that there was a dubbing difference when, what does she say? She says something like, when you meet someone, you don't know if they're going to turn out to be like really good, TK. Like TK, or really bad, yeah, like Davis. And apparently in the Japanese, she actually says something that like, something that's similar, but more like, they could be really cool, like Michael, I really like him or something. And then everyone was like, whoa, she's crushing on Michael.
Whoa, hitting on that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was weird that she like kind of hit on TK. I found that weird.
I mean, it's also weird that she's saying, if that's actually the line in Japanese, that it's about like, but once you learn more about them, you'll know that they're better. And to then refer to this person that she doesn't know better.
That's true.
But I don't know the full thing.
At least she does know TK.
Yeah. But I also wouldn't say that he's like super cool like that.
TK's the best. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, sure. If he reverted back to his kid self, he'd be the best. He's fine. He's fine. It just seems weird to be like, they'd be awesome like TK. I don't have anything against TK. It just felt weird.
It did feel weird because Yoli's never like, you know, she called him a cute boy once, like 14 episodes ago. And after that, she kind of lost interest in him because he's kind of boy next door, you know? Like, nothing against TK.
He's literally boy next door.
He is literally boy next door.
Also, he's Kari, so, you know.
Okay, well, I think, no. Did y'all see how Yoli and Kari were just, like, all over each other? It's still happening.
What?
They're not all over each other, but...
In the submarine episode?
Yeah, in the submarine episode, they were, like, holding hands.
I totally
missed
that.
Yeah, no, they're still...
Well, they were the ones that made straws, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, straws.
Is that straws? Ooh.
That's not what I was talking about, but, like, they were, yeah.
What were you talking about?
There was a picture at some point where they were, you know, doing the clasping hands thing, where clasping each other's hands. Thing.
Why?
I don't remember.
You don't remember why?
I don't know. I think they were scared to die. I think that's what that picture was.
Great. Really romantic.
Super romantic.
How do you both feel about the fact that Yoli seems so often, I wouldn't say she's defined by it, but she so often talks about how other boys are cute.
I'm okay with that.
Do you think it's a good thing or bad thing?
I mean, it's annoying because why would anyone want to be reduced to, oh, I'm appreciating these handsome specimens, but I actually find Yoli to be defined more by her admiration for other girls.
Hmm.
She is all about admiring Mimi and Sora to an extent, and a little bit Kari.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like Yoli kind of has no self-definitions.
Her definition for me is just being the one who's like when they're in danger, she's like, yeah, you're going to save me, right? Like, guys.
I was reading something the other day. It was an image macro somewhere on the internet complaining that in that episode where they're hung up, the fake ones are hung up for Deltamon to attack, that in the Japanese, she really says, don't save me. In the English, she says, save just me.
But I think it's funny.
It's funnier that way, yeah.
It is, but yeah.
That episode was I'm glad that she said save me, because if all of them had been like, don't save me, it just would have been mercilessly over the top. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You're like, yo, some people actually just do want to live. Like,
right?
They're like, screw you guys.
Actually, not everything is the Hunger Games. Let's move on.
No, everything is the Hunger Games.
So I had some loose ideas around the entire concept of dark years, or not dark years. What are they called in this season?
Dark rings
and dark spirals. And so in the episode with Shuriban's appearance and sincerity and stuff, we got Mimi talking about how Digimon aren't born evil, they're just under the influence of dark spirals, which is a weird statement because she experienced Digimon who were born evil before, but whatever. And maybe they weren't born evil, maybe they were turned evil, but whatever. And that's, well, the more I read into that, the more I thought about how the show is kind of saying, by having the dark rings and dark spirals, and the trajectory of this season is, I don't want to spoil too much, but I assume most people have already seen it if they're watching this. Anyway, but that a lot of the villains in this season are people who are being manipulated by others and who aren't inherently evil. And I think that's a recurring theme about the season of what makes someone evil and how everyone is influenced by others. And the thing I kind of don't like about the dark spirals and dark rings is that it makes everything black and white, kind of literally, I guess, in that, like, it's like, if you're controlled by a dark spiral, you're bad. If you're not, you're good. And I mean, like, in the real world, influence and what makes someone evil, what makes someone act badly, it's all so much more complicated than that. But then I bounce back to, like, well, okay, like, Digimon acts as a parable. You know, it shows these black and white things so that we can kind of see them in our real lives in the more complex, mundane way that they shine through.
What was that last part?
like, is it wrong for a story to portray things in a really black and white way if it's supposed to be a parable for more complex things? Trying the examples they've brought up before, like, it doesn't, everything that happens in the show doesn't need to be one-to-one directly relatable to your real life. It just needs to be something that's vaguely similar so you can apply some of the morals and thoughts and lessons to it. So I don't know if I should be complaining that it's all black and white in this show.
I mean, I think what you said about it being like everybody who's evil is manipulated by somebody else is the interesting part here.
Mm-hmm.
The being reduced, like, making it then be reduced to, like, if nobody is controlling you, then you're good is silly.
Yeah.
Especially since ostensibly people who are controlling, well, it's confusing because Ken is being controlled by some thing.
Right, it's layers. It's like, he's controlling his minions, but he's being controlled by someone else who is also being controlled by someone else who is also being controlled by someone else who is just evilness.
So there's some root evilness that just possesses.
And yeah, there's some root evilness, and I kind of give it a pass in this way of looking at things because it is inherited from the past. And so that gives it a more interesting angle than just ultimate evil. But yeah, it is weird because, like, that chain has to stop somewhere.
Yeah, it would just feel like, yeah. I guess I was going to say people who are controlling are not being controlled, but would have, but are not good, but that does not appear to be a true statement. So,
yeah.
Gonna renege that.
I'm also really sick of seeing the kids try to convince the Digimon to break free, which it seemed like that's the route Mimi was taking with the Digitomamon when they thought something was up. It was like, well, if I speak to you, like, talk about how you wanted to have friends, we have friends, you have friends now, like, she would break free. And it's like, we saw that happen with Angemon and Kari, but we also saw it not happen with Agumon and Tai, which is, like, the strongest bond that has been developed in the entire show. So if it didn't work for them, I feel like expecting to work between Mimi and some random Digimon she just met for the first time now is just, like,
yeah.
It's already been clear that, like, the conditions to make someone break free of the control is completely arbitrary and whatever the plot needs for the scenario. So it's hard to really get invested in the emotions that the characters are spouting out or whatever. And my last little mini rant is about this empire and about slavery, in that in real life, empires are, like, a lot of things are coming about, not this black and white. They're, even if a nation is conquering other nations, there is some positive aspect to that. I'm not talking in general of, like, all times this happened, but at least the Roman Empire, there were positive things to other city-states or whatever that were absorbed into the Roman Empire, and they, you know, received more prosperity because of that. They shared the wealth, I guess. And that complexity goes away when everyone you conquer is just a slave, a literal slave, and, like, controlled by, like, you control their mind and stuff. So I feel like the dark rings are, like, they wanted to have it like this, like, he's building his empire and he's an emperor, but they also wanted to make it clear that he's evil. So they use the shorthand of him mind controlling everyone and enslaving them. And I guess I wish it had been cooler if we were actually an empire, but like Ash says, I can't always have what I want.
Yeah. I was just like, you want complex villains? Don't come to a kids show.
I, yeah.
I guess this season...
That's what Korra has taught me.
This season, I feel like, has more complex villains than at least the first season, and I can't remember Returns to other seasons.
Okay, yeah, like, Ken... Yeah, yeah, but, like, you're not gonna get, you know, George R. R. Martin levels of politics here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's weird. It's wrong to look at a media, a certain kind of media, and expect it to do things that it's not meant to do, if that's not a strong suit. So, yeah, yeah. It's a good point.
Lessons Not Learned Part 2, Cody's episode.
Cody,
you're so good sometimes. And other times, it's like, what is your problem?
Cody.
Okay, so Asher, you thought Cody was not very Cody in this episode?
Yeah, I did.
How so?
I mean, he's not usually so outspokenly stubborn. Usually his deal is if somebody says something he doesn't agree with, he disagrees quietly and then lets them do their thing while not actually in his heart giving up on his own convictions.
Mm.
But here he's just like, no, I'm not going, just to create unnecessary drama.
But I feel like that was because he was actually being forced into doing something.
Yeah, and that's been a huge problem for Cody this entire time, is like the kids do what they want, and he's always the voice of reason, except here.
Except the one time.
The one time he's not the voice of reason. And, like, they're always ignoring him, and, like, he's too small to fight back. And it rubs me the wrong way so much. Like, do not teach people that they can boss little kids around.
Yeah.
Especially when these little kids are, like, 500 times more sensible.
Yeah,
except in this episode.
Cody feels like he's on a totally different wavelength than the kids. And it kind of teaches that, like, if that's the case for you, you should just not speak up. And people will bully you into acceptance. And
yeah.
I guess I thought it was okay, the cases in this episode where they lie to him, bully him, push him into things.
See, I don't agree that it's okay.
I mean, I only think it's okay because he was not being the voice of reason and they were, but it's problematic because he's normally the voice of reason and they're not. So it reinforces that power dynamic.
I don't think it's okay. Like, he was freaking out, and like, if Mega Seedramon had been there and they stuck him in the thing and shot him out into the ocean, he would have been dead.
Wait, why didn't Mega Seedramon?
Armadillomon didn't even go with him.
That's what happened.
There was room for, like, they could have all scrunched in there. Like,
maybe not all of them, but more than just Cody.
Yeah, totally. And, like, why did Mega Seedramon not pursue him?
He left.
He left? Why didn't they all leave then? Why didn't they just break through the wall and swim up?
Well, that would have killed them.
Yeah.
just speaking as someone who understands just a little bit of physics, like, that would not have been a good idea.
Well, neither does Waymon breaking through the wall and then the place not filling up with
water. Yeah, no, that doesn't make
any sense
either.
That didn't make any sense. But, like, also, I mean, Cody's whole deal is even when he's being irrational, he knows that he's being irrational and he faces his fear. Like, he even says, like, this is a fear I have to face and I'm going to do it. And then they're like, no, you're going to go. And he's like, no. And I was just like, this is not rational. This is not how we work. I understand that Cody is a scared kid, but, like, he wouldn't... I feel that normally he wouldn't have kept that going so long. And where did this fear of water come from? Like,
don't know.
Where? This was never mentioned before. They have been... I guess they haven't really been at water scenes before. Have they or haven't they?
I don't think they have. And it's also pretty early on. I gave that a pass, because...
Yeah, I was okay with that part.
But, like, I was trying to rationalize it as being from that time his plane had to make an emergency landing during the Myotismon attack.
That's deep.
I was like, okay, but then why wouldn't he be afraid of flying?
Is he not afraid of flying?
He doesn't seem to have a problem with flying, although it has not come up.
Maybe it has. I mean, I think he's been on the back of other people before, but the back of other Digimon who fly. I think that's happened.
Yeah, I think so. But, like, they could have tied things together into this episode better to make it stronger. Like, why wouldn't he believe that reliability is... It makes sense for him to assume that the Digi-Egg is for him.
Oh, yeah, I didn't understand that part of the episode where he's like, I'm not going to try to pick it up. I'm like, why?
Right? Like, why wouldn't you try? I think that he was feeling guilty and he was guilting himself out of it, but
like, it made no sense. Like, why would his lying mean that he is not reliable? Like,
well, because it's, you know, like sort of a faith purity thing, actually, and not actually reliability.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got that aspect.
Let's go to his lesson instead of me just complaining about his characterization in this episode.
Oh, yes. The lesson was lying is not always bad. However,
and that's not a good lesson.
Really?
First of all, I'm okay with that lesson, but I don't believe that Cody ever lied in the first place is more my problem.
He told the teacher that the Joe's dad was in the hospital.
Right, but yeah. He lies about one person being injured because he can't tell the truth about how other people might die.
Yeah.
Because it's far-fetched and fantastical.
Right. I mean, it does seem like a really minor kind of lie, but I also understand this, like, person has a really strong moral code who is also a bit too childish to see how it applies to the real world and feeling that, like, this is the rule, you know, especially there are a lot of people, like, as grown adults who think of things in terms of rules, especially in terms of, like, I am for some reason thinking right now in terms of media analysis, who think of, like, this is a strong character if they meet these rules, and they are a bad character if they do not meet these rules. And I can totally buy him, like, hearing this is the rule, I cannot break this rule.
Yeah.
That is the kind of person I am.
Yeah.
And even though it's a lie that's like, you know, it's still about saving someone's life, and you said someone's life is a danger, that he's like, well, I broke the rule. I buy that.
I buy that too. That's not actually part of the problem I have with this episode. He just...
One of the few parts is not a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I buy that. It's just that Cody seems smarter than that in any other...
He's also 8.
Yeah.
And his grandpa is the one who told him. I don't like that his grandpa told him that. Like, why would the worst thing be lying?
Right, that was just super weird. Like, I started to think, like, was that because the grandpa was trying to teach him a lesson about not knowing, like, learning to not trust his elders? Like, by giving him such terrible advice? Yeah, I mean, I appreciate this felt contrary to how most lessons in children's shows are taught, in terms of, like, usually it is the very things work out very conveniently so that you can have these moral high grounds and very simplistic attitudes and they all work out in the end, and you don't really have to face the realities of compromising your morals and learning how they fit into the real world and messy situations. And even though it was pretty contrived and the lie he ended up having to tell was pretty simple, and it was still pretty simple and convenient how his grandfather let him off the hook about saying where he was going and stuff like that, it's still a teaching lesson. Like, if you have these morals, you need to compromise them sometimes, and that's okay. And that doesn't mean you've lost yourself.
Yeah.
It's a good lesson.
So, but wasn't, I can't remember which one of you, wasn't one of you saying the lesson was really bad that it was teaching?
I mean, to couch it in the terms of, like, sometimes lying is good, is, like, I don't know. I just more took it as, like, I didn't think he told a real lie.
Yeah, and I definitely think saying, like, the general rule of sometimes lying's good, kids, can be totally misinterpreted and used to do bad things. Like, especially, like, in a relationship, I don't really subscribe to the philosophy of, like, not telling the other person something because you were protecting them from something. You know, it's like...
Yeah, like, why? I mean, it ties into my problem with the kids keeping all of this secret from their parents in the first place.
For no, like, they knew about it last year or 4 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, really. Last time. Yeah.
Yeah, what was that scene with, like, Ty's mom and...
Yeah, and Izzy was like, it's going to be really hard to keep this a secret from our parents if we're just, you know, porting in and out of our rooms. And I was like, well, why are you keeping it a secret?
Yeah, I was having a discussion earlier today about Fate's Day Night and how after watching Fate Zero, it's really jarring that these kids are in the middle of a life and death battle / war, and they're like, well, we still need to go to high school, and it's like, why? And the answer is because anime. Well, it's not technically, I mean, it's a visual
actually,
novel.
Actually, the answer is because Shiro is dumb, but...
No, but he's not the only one.
Well, Tosaka has her reasons.
I feel like those are all still...
They are stupid reasons.
Tosaka should kill Shiro.
Anyway.
Unfortunately, she won't.
They're all reasons to justify the story using these common tropes. And that's the same thing that we're talking about here, which I can't remember what the actual point was. What are we talking about? What am I bringing this back to?
Lying.
No, it's not lying. Oh, it's lying to
their parents.
Yeah, right. like, they do that because that's a thing they do in shows like this.
Yeah, and like, but Cody's grandfather should know better, because the fact that Cody's dad couldn't tell him what was going on, you know, led to this entire mess.
So you think that Cody's dad should have learned, or sorry, Cody's grandfather should have learned? Or I take from that more that, like, Cody's grandfather hasn't learned.
Yes, he hasn't.
Okay.
And now he's passing that not learning, that anti-lesson to Cody. That you, instead of, like, talking to your parents or guardians and, like, getting helpful advice, you should just keep secrets so that you don't end up telling a lie or whatever.
Hmm. I hadn't really considered how it all comes down to what they tell their parents to some degree. I forget the details of the stuff at the end.
Yeah, it was like, don't force Cody to tell a lie. It's like, a lie of omission is still kind of a lie.
yeah. It's just not a good treatise on lying and its pros or cons. Lying is not a good thing, generally. It generally comes out in the end, too. It's generally not great to do.
Nope.
Why not? Honest communication. But no, then this would not be anime.
This would not be good storytelling. Even though it's still not good storytelling.
Yeah.
Funny how that works. I mean, also, I got this feeling that Cody's mom was, like, mean from that short interaction.
Right, and she's not. Like, she's a nice lady.
Right, I couldn't quite pin down what about it made me feel that way.
Well, I mean, it was framed in a way that was obviously, like, she is pestering him for information he doesn't want to give, and the grandfather's a good guy for letting him go. I mean, it's...
Except not.
Yeah, letting him go, and then doing a really bad moral lesson, and yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Yup.
This place is so new to me, I have so many unanswered questions.
Why does Michael's shirt have the katakana character Ma on it when he's an American?
Because my kuru.
But he's an American.
So? He knows Japanese, apparently.
Oh yeah, they were talking Japanese. Or they would have been in the Japanese version, huh? I guess he's like a weeaboo or something.
I guess.
Okay, so Cody is terrified of the ocean.
Yes.
And then he gets in Submarimon, and I'm just like, what happens if Submarimon gets hit by Mega Seedramon and then has to de-digivolve? Cody dies. Who thought this was a smart idea?
Yeah. Submarimon did.
It's so like, silly.
It's like the ultimate extreme of my complaint about them riding their Digimon. Like, that's the least place that is safe to ride with, like,
So silly. How did Kari know the Digi Egg was for Cody just from her not being able to pick it up?
Well, I think everybody else...
I assume they had already tried at that point.
Yeah, I assumed everyone else had tried.
Really?
Off camera, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just silly.
I think
why does Kari have to go last again, then?
Anyway... speaking of Kari, why is this girl so obsessed with the National Guard?
Yes, why is Kari
again?
Yes! Yeah.
Wait, what did she say exactly? I can't remember the line.
I don't remember what it was in the last episode, right? Episode 17.
I'm not sure. I don't think it was, because I remember going through my notes near the beginning of my notes and asking you about it. But it's near the bottom of my unanswered question. Huh. Let me find it in my notes.
It was something she said. It was like something, something, and the National Guard. And I was like, why do you keep bringing this up?
Maybe, like, she wants to be in the National Guard.
So it was in episode 17?
That's what I said.
Right, okay. That was a good. And I think when they're talking about, like, the ghosts, maybe? And they're like, what do we do about the ghosts?
Yeah, no, yeah, it was definitely during, like, talking about Wizardmon ghosts.
So strange. Speaking of which, I found the gem in my notes, which is commenting on how Ty is wearing a shirt with a triangle on it. It says triangle.
That's just all your notes say, triangle?
No, it says, like, Ty's shirt name, titled triangle, triangle.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, people don't talk about the National Guard that much, especially in Japan. I was really confused by what happens to sustenance they eat in the digital world and whether that's that carries through with them to the real world. Because in the first episode, they talk about how they're hungry, so they should go back home and eat at home in the real world. And they're like, oh, no, let's stay here and go to the restaurant. So apparently their digital form maintains the same hunger as a normal form.
Yes,
apparently no one else is confused, or no one else is surprised by this.
No.
I find it very strange.
Whatever.
Also find it arbitrary what it takes to destroy a dark spiral. You know, sometimes it's just Rageamon and Garurumon attacking at the same time. Sometimes it's something not that hard to defeat Gorillamon. But I guess it was a champion Digimon that did it.
Yes.
And then to defeat the one on Shogun-Gekkomon, it was like all of them had to attack at once. But yeah. Oh, and why? So in episode 14, Mimi comes from America through the Digiport. In episode 17, she's in the real world. She just like flew in without mentioning it and looks completely different than she did a couple episodes ago. It smelled like the writers or directors or animators hadn't communicated that much that well. That like maybe those episodes were in development around the same time and they didn't communicate that stuff. But the most of the staff, at least the credited staff, is not in common between the two episodes, except for the writer. The writer was the same, the Japanese writer, who wrote the scenario. So like I would expect they would know to keep that in mind. And I mean, it makes sense they change their costumes because it's summer and stuff, but it was very drastic. It's like she had pink hair and then didn't. So,
but okay, so Izzy in the last episode says we haven't been able to get through any other portals, but it's like that's blatantly untrue.
Like
straight up blatantly untrue.
Yeah. Also, many things he said were untrue. Like, Kari didn't even go to the digital world when she was sucked into the dark ocean. That's not the digital world. Ah!
Oh, there was also something about... All right, it was I can't remember which episode it was. Oh, I guess it was the second one when it's when they're in Little Edo or whatever. And they're like, are we in the digital world? We don't know where we are. And then they see a control spire and TK's like, that's a sure sign we're in the digital world. And I'm like, two episodes ago, you were like, I don't think it's in the digital world. I have no indication that it's not. There's a control spire, but it's still not the digital world.
TK just knows these things, okay?
Yeah,
TK is amazing. He's so
TK.
Ridiculous dialogue, Josh, where we go around and each pick our top three funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching lines from the episodes. I'm sure this will be most ridiculous, because there was nothing touching. I don't know. you, my dearest audience, choose a winner. This is a sports draft. We're picking a sports team.
The Kansas voice. Pick a winner. This is a sports draft.
Sports draft. This will probably make Ash mad, but I'm going to pick it anyway. It's from episode 16, when Cody tries to call Joe and gets his voice message. I probably have some of this misquoted, because I was like too lazy to go back, but it's basically, he's like,
hi, this is Joe. Sorry I can't answer my cell phone right now, but I had to turn it off so it wouldn't ring during my biology test. I'm pretty good at biology, so I'll turn it back on real soon, unless the test is on molecular biology. Oh, I have to go study. Bye.
I'm lost.
I love Joe. I love him. He's my favorite.
It was just his voice message on his...
But why funny?
Why not funny?
Okie dokie. My turn! I get to go second for once! Okay. Okay. This is from episode 17, and I'm picking it just because I love the voice actor's delivery on it, so it's Matt. And he says,
first I'll take a little stroll over to our old refrigerator and take a peek at what's not expired.
It's like, this is my living on my own bachelor experience.
So stereotypical.
Ash and I lived together, and I feel like it was, I was like, yep, that's, he mentioned they hadn't gotten groceries in like months, and I was like, yeah, I've probably gotten groceries maybe once in the past couple of months and maybe like three times in the past year. So
yeah, but then this just means that they don't exist anymore.
What?
Like there just aren't things to eat in the refrigerator.
Yeah, but we also have had to go through and toss out stuff that expired a lot. Yeah, I was like, this is too close to home, I guess. When you mentioned the delivery you loved, I thought it was going to be, I didn't write this down because it wasn't a good quote, but it was Davis, like when he's, I'm not going to like include it as an actual official thing, but it was something, it was like they were all pressuring Davis into saying Cody should be the one to go.
Uh-huh.
And he's like not sure about it. And then Kari says Cody should be the one to go.
That was funny.
It's like, he's like... Like, the face he makes, like, fits perfectly with
there
the
were way. A lot of funny moments that were visual instead of audio this time. And I was like, this is unfortunate, but What can you do?
Okay, so my first quote is from Davis, and it's from episode 17. Well, it starts with Davis. Okay, so Davis says,
"He doesn't stand a ghost of a chance."
Oh God!
And but the best part is that Kari then says,
"Good one."
Which
yes, that was good.
I thought it was good. Very meta because it's in. Like I wonder if the writer, whoever chose the title, knew that line was in there, and vice versa, because it was just like,
oh my God.
I feel like it wasn't intentionally poking fun at itself, but it ended up that way.
Oh, it's my turn. Indeed. I guess we're all in episode 17 land, so I'll stay there.
Okay.
And this is Matt. Matt talking to TK about their slovenliness. And he says,
"Those dishes are so filthy, I think I'd rather face the Dark Masters again than clean them."
I have felt that pain, too.
Okay, so I heard that, and I was like, this is ridiculous. This is a stupid overstatement. And then I thought about some more. I looked at those dishes, and I was like, actually, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Also, weird thing I wanted to point out before episode 17 is that I was looking at the staff credits of the whole series, which I made into a chart, and the English dub writer who wrote it along with two other people, but along with Jeff Nimoy and Bob Buchholz, who co-write most of the episodes. Anyway, he was only involved in the first half of the season. He was only involved in writing some of the most important episodes, which I found really strange. It's weird, like, he didn't seem to do anything else, but also was only pulled in for the important episodes, which is odd. Cool story, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did not think the episode was, like, a better quality, though.
Okay, my turn again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is episode 15, and Kari is like,
"Davis, sometimes you're so insensitive."
And Davis is like,
"I'm so sensitive, I use a special toothpaste so my teeth don't hurt when I eat ice cream."
And I was like, "I feel you, Davis. I understand your pain." "I, too, use a special toothpaste so my teeth don't hurt when I eat ice cream."
All right. I'm glad you and Davis share this connection.
Yes, it's a deep connection.
I mean, if I had to describe Ash, I would basically just say Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm exactly in every way like Davis.
I mean, the toothpaste is the only important part.
Yes, that is the most striking connection we have.
So mine is from episode 16, and it's Gatomon, and it's a weird mix of emotions. So they're talking about how everyone's laughing, even though they're all like about to die, supposedly, but it's a kid's show, so like there was no tension of that anyway. But so Gatomon says,
"Laughter is just a way to cover things up."
And I'm like, wow, that's like really kind of dark, but also ties into the themes of lying and how they're just lying about their emotions. And then says,
"You know, sort of like I do in the cat box."
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay. Thanks for ruining the moment, Gatomon.
Thanks, Gatomon.
Gatomon always ruins the moment with a cat joke.
I mean, I guess it's not that far-fetched for the Digimon to be pooping, because, I mean, that's part of the mechanics of the V-Pad.
It's true. Digimon do poop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but she's a female Digimon, and females don't poop, so it's been proven.
Apparently she does. Apparently she does.
Huh. Okay. My turn again. I guess I'll stick with episode 17. So this is, might also be incorrectly quoted, but they're like,
"Starting tomorrow, we won't be able to use this classroom."
And then one of them says,
"Oh, yeah, I have this written down."
Oh, TK says,
"Oh, yeah, that's right. The detention room has been moved here and all the bad kids will be put in the computer lab."
Davis says,
"Hey, we're not all bad."
I don't remember that. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I liked that.
I thought it was actually a good way to, like, give us details about Davis that are probably untrue, but, you know.
At the same time, like, it's good to know that, you know, kids in detention aren't bad.
That's true.
Unless you think Davis is bad.
Well, he's bad in a not... He's just bad. Character.
He's not a bad kid.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go. So this is back from episode 14.
Whoa, that was like forever ago.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, let me make sure that's the one I want to use. Yeah, that's fine. So Yoli's like,
"Do you want to know what my hobby is, Michael?"
And Davis says,
"Boys don't count, Yoli."
I just love the way Davis and Yoli play off each other. They're great. I'm so glad they're friends.
I actually liked, on the opposite, when they're trapped underwater and they both hate each other, and I'm like, these characters just like each other as much as I do.
No, Davis and Yoli are buddies. Bosom friends.
So this last one is episode 14, and it's Yoli saying, I can't remember exactly where it falls in the Digitamon mess, but at some point they realize Digitamon's acting differently, so Lee says,
"Careful, he's acting differently now!"
And Digitamon says,
"You're exactly right! Before I was soft and runny, but now I'm hard-boiled!"
And it was just like, oh god, you mixed two really terrible puns in there? Like, oh my god. Who wrote that?
Yes.
I need to look up who wrote that. Who wrote that? That was thanks to Rebecca Forstadt, Jeff Nimoy, and Bob Buchholz. I will shame you forever. I wish I could find out who wrote the title. So Craig Doyle was the only writer on Ghost of a Chance, which makes me think he must have written the title, but I'm not sure about that. That could just be like the showrunner, main translator's job. Anyway.
What are you going to do to these people?
shame them on Twitter? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I wish I liked the episodes that Rebecca Forstadt and Charlotte Fulton helped write, because I'm like, I want to like the episode written by women. But,
but it's so hard.
It doesn't seem to happen, yeah. Actually, no, because the last one written by Charlotte Fulton was Ken's Secret, which I liked. You can find detailed links and images of everything we discussed in this episode in our show notes at podigis.com/204. Check out our comment section on the site if you want to send feedback or see cool thoughts from other listeners. You can also leave comments on the Digimon subreddit and at With the Will if you find us through there. Vote for your favorite dialogue draft pick on our episode page and we'll announce the winner next episode. Leave us a review on iTunes if you want to support the show and help us find new listeners. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr to hear more about the podcast between each episode. Next time on Podigis. In episodes 18 through 21, someone finally punches sense into Ken. Bye.
Bye.
And remember, never stop digivolving.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Cody.
Yeah, I know that.
Kingdom Hearts re Cody.
No. Trying to wait for the sawing stuff.
Yeah, I figured. How long does it seem to go on?
A while. I just like want to punch who's ever doing it in the face with the saw.
No, Davis and Yolie are buddies. Bosom friends.
Mm-hmm. Bosom friends? What does that mean?
B-O-S-O-M, Jeff. Bosom buddies. Oh, it's a phrase. Just let it go.
Ash and his phrases.
It's an idiom.
What's a body loose? Apparently, euphemistically, it's a body loose, which is a parasitic insect.
A louse?
Sure.
Body loose. I was like, what is Jeff saying?
Jeff's so incompetent at language. La God. Next time on Podigious. In episodes 18 through 21, someone finally punches sense into Ken. Bye.
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 Did I write that? Punch of sense into Ken?
You must have.
Yes, you wrote that.
I was like, that doesn't... Okay. Anyway, and remember, never stop digivolving.
Jeff can't even remember what he wrote anymore.
It was only like an hour or 2 hours ago, and I don't remember.